Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, February 15th. So how would you characterize your relationship with alcohol during the pandemic? How much do you drink, or how much do you think about not drinking? If these questions give you pause, then you might be one of the millions of Americans with a complicated relationship with alcohol. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, 1 in 8 Americans fit the definition of having alcohol use disorder, and millions more say they drink too much or drink more than they would like, not necessarily fitting the definition of alcohol abuse disorder, but living in a murky gray area where problem drinking merges with quote-unquote normal drinking. And it's safe to say that gray area has expanded in the past few years, as nearly 1 in 4 adults reported drinking more to manage pandemic stress. My next guest thinks about this a lot, and she wants to help people navigate through the grayness, through the drinking or thinking about not drinking. Anna Marie Cox is a writer, a podcaster, a political commentator, a commentator on science fiction and other cool stuff. Her podcast is called Space the Nation, get it? And she's also someone with an addiction who's been sober for 10 years. And now she started a new advice column for a New York magazine called Sober Questioning. Anna Marie Cox, always great to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's really good to be here.
And we've had you on the show many times, but mostly for political analysis and tips for having hard conversations for people you don't agree with. But I don't think we've ever talked to you about your sobriety in all your appearances. So why'd you start an advice column called Sober Questioning?
Well, it's something that I've pretty much never been shy to talk about, but it wasn't part of my professional life at all. I've written about it here and there, but during the pandemic, I had a lot of people come to me with questions about sobriety. I have a friend who I'm very proud to say, is still sober today, having come to me probably a few months after the pandemic started. And that's her, not me, but It makes me super happy.
Yeah. Although you write in your opening column, sometimes I think my extraordinary circumstances make me a bad example for anyone else who wants to stay sober. How so?
Well, I am a low bottom drunk, as they say, not on the outside so much. By the time I hit bottom, my marriage was somewhat intact. My career was okay. Those were starting to be affected. But my mental health was really suffering. And I started to have a pattern where every time I got really drunk, I would want to die. Mm. And you think about that long enough, and you start thinking, maybe I'll try it, And so I attempted to end my life. And apparently, it was a good try. And I wound up in a hospital. And I had probably my first real surrender. I woke up. And I realized that what I tried didn't work. I was a little upset about that because I felt like, wow, I've tried everything, But you know what I hadn't tried?
What?
I hadn't tried not drinking. And I was, as they say sometimes, beaten into a state of reasonableness. And lying there in that hospital bed, this sounds cliche, but it is true. I decided, okay, fine. I'll do what people suggest. I will try this thing and I'll see what happens.
And that was 10 years ago?
That was almost 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. My sobriety date is March 23rd. And it's both flown by and dragged. I kind of can't believe it. I went to treatment, and when people would come through the treatment center and talk about being sober for that long, I used to think, well, you're clearly just not an alcoholic, right? There's no way you could be sober for that long and be like me. And I now know, like, it's possible. I both drank and used benzos. And mm-hmm. that's dangerous, by the way.
That's a combination, especially yeah. dangerous.
Yeah. And here I am, you know, and I am so grateful to be alive. I never forget that. I never, ever forget that.
And so before we open up the phones, you write a question. I don't get that often, but I love to answer when it does come up. Why do you keep not drinking?
I answered this question last night. Someone asked me one of the letters that I got, and I got to answer. And there's a... I can feel joy now, you know? Mm-hmm. And deep down, I used to not like myself very much. And it's just as simple as that. And I like myself today. I have a connection to the world, and I would say a higher power, kind of controversial, but... Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, if I don't drink, I get to celebrate. Like, I was part of something miraculous if I didn't drink today. And, like, everyone probably has something kind of miraculous happen in their day. Like, they were supposed to get hit by a truck and didn't, or their kid had a close call and something, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I know, something really awesome happened in my life. I don't want to give that up.
Do you want to talk about this gray area that I was alluding to in the introduction to the segment? Like, does it matter where the line is between alcohol abuse syndrome and something less than that? Can you talk about the gray area?
Sure. I think it's different for every person. It's kind of as simple as that. I had people ask me, do I qualify for, you know, to call myself an alcoholic or AA or a recovery program if I don't drink that much, but I just don't like the way that I drink? And I would say, sure, you know, mm-hmm. like, recovery is available to anyone that wants it. And, you know, one of the things that I love about being sober, and I should have said this earlier, is that I actually have a program of recovery, you know, that I keep in touch with on a daily basis that helps me become a better person, and keeps me attached to the world and keeps my relationships close. So that's me, right? Mm-hmm. But if you want to cut down, and you can cut down, I think you can get glimpses of that clarity, and your relationships will improve, you know? It's just, I personally, right, I can't just cut down. mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. is it?
It's the harm reduction model, right? We talk about this so much with opioids right. and other things, and whether there should be needle exchanges and injection sites. And the harm reduction model says it can't be all or nothing, because so many people aren't going to make it to nothing.
Right.
But you're saying for some people, it's got to be nothing.
For some people, if you can do, it's really simple. If you can do moderation, then go for it. I am happy for you. I am jealous of you. It sometimes is simpler to just cut it out for a while and see what that does for you. And then there are some people who can cut it out almost completely. I know people who have a glass of wine every couple months, and that's it. Awesome, you know? And I still feel like it's worth seeing what one's life is like without chemical augmentation, let's say. I think I kind of hope that for everybody. Mm-hmm. Sort of like I would hope everyone to get a chance to go camping, you know, to experience nature, like, up close and personal. Being sober for a while is experiencing yourself up close and personal.
Let's take a call. And this is coming from Paul on Long Island, who says he's a liquor retailer and he has some observations. Paul, you're on WNYC with Anna Marie Cox. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, hi. Hi, you guys. I am an alcoholic, but it's irrelevant with this kind of conversation. But I have 27 years of recovery. But the retail situation, thanks. The retail thing was, it was like the first day of the COVID, and the first mm-hmm. week or two, the purchases were mind boggling enough that I wrote you know, memos to my trade organization on how they really have to change their buying habits. And the companies were running out of the products. The people, a lot had to do with them being home. You know, they were home, mm-hmm. so they could drink in front of the computer while they're working, I suppose. But to see them change, like, their whole affect changed because not only was their hair, like the ladies, their hair was turning gray, plus they were drinking a lot. The men were putting on weight, plus they were drinking a lot. Mm. So it was something to behold. And, you know, it's not my position to get in there and say, guys, you're drinking too much. But it was really a big observation.
Are you still in the business?
No, actually, I'm out of the business October. October, I got out of the business.
Uh-huh. And that's still relatively recent. So in that year and a half between when the pandemic started and when you got out, did it get worse and worse and worse? Or did it start to ease up after a while as people adjusted to the new reality?
Yeah, as people started to go back to work, that was part of it. Like somewhere in the middle, people came to their senses. Like the first time ever, people would say, "I'm drinking too much." Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't say "I'm done," but they would say, "I'm drinking too much." You know, they noticed that. So when they started going back to work, that was one thing, and also some of that money. Like early on, people were getting the money, and that I don't know if that was, you know, increased their drinking as much. Yeah. They were drinking better.
Thank you for your story.
You're welcome.
Anna Marie, anything on that? I also was wondering how, and I guess I could have asked them, but I was wondering how unusual is it for a recovering alcoholic to own a liquor store?
You know, it's surprisingly common to find alcoholics in the places you'd think that it would be a danger zone. Bartenders, waiters, you know, service people, restaurant owners, chefs. And I think that's because, and I would say journalism. And I think that's because I'm going to try to speak just for myself, but I definitely was attracted to a career that let me kind of do my own thing. Right. And you know, drinking is pretty common in journalism. It's kind of part of the job. Right. And I think that, and then I had to get sober. And I wonder if maybe for people, I can't speak to people who go into those jobs after they get sober, but I think it would be pretty common to find those people in jobs before they get sober. And then that's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. So why not keep doing it?
Yeah. Here's one from Twitter. Question for Anna Marie. Was talk therapy a part of your journey? And if so, what role did it play and what was the impact?
So I love my various therapists through the years. They have been incredibly important to me in gathering insights on why I do certain things, right? Haven't really been able to help me stop doing those things. I think it's important to get that insight, right? But all a therapist can do is encourage and help you to understand your own situation. I felt pretty confident I understood why I drank. That wasn't a mystery to me, you know. I come from an alcoholic family. I have a mental health diagnosis in addition to being an addict alcoholic. I have social anxiety, believe it or not. And so I understood why I drank. I just couldn't stop, and my therapist couldn't help me stop. But that insight is important, you know, like I would say that's a good pillar to have. I'm going to mix my metaphors here. You can't put a pillar in a toolbox. So I'll just say it's a good thing to have in your recovery toolbox. But as with building anything, you can't use just one tool, you know.
Holly in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Holly.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my issue is I've always drank, but never every day. And I now drink every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not drinking I don't black out. I don't get, you know, but I'm just drinking to kind of like numb myself, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm depressed. I'm worried. And, you know, I think it started a little bit before the pandemic, but the pandemic has definitely made it bad. And so I don't feel like, so I quit January of 2021. I did a sort of 3-week cleanse. I didn't drink, and I kind of still felt like crap, and I couldn't sleep. And so then I went back to drinking again. What I want to do is I want to become a regular, like, weekend drinker like I once was in life, and, like, enjoy, like, a nice cocktail and enjoy, like, a great beer without it being every night at dinner I have a cocktail and then I have two more. And I don't know how to, like, break that habit now. does that make any sense? Like, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic or if I'm one of those, if I'm just using it as a coping mechanism. I can't tell.
This is the archetypal gray area story, right, yeah. Anna-Marie?
Yeah. You know, I almost think it's unfortunate. The word alcoholic can be problematic, right? Because it does, I think, keep people from being able to assess their own relationship, like, in a relative way. Because we all have our internal definitions of what an alcoholic is. And for you, like, you're probably picturing something kind of specific about what an alcoholic is, right? And no one wants to be one, although I'm kind of grateful to be one, but we can talk about that later. But in a way, actually, no, this is appropriate. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic because I know I am a heckin' alcoholic, right? Like, I don't have the gray area. But my good news for you is you get to define, you know, sometimes, you get to define who you are, and you get to define your bottom, right? And what your boundaries are. Now, my suggestion comes, I have to always speak from my own experience, right? So for me, I, in addition to sort of self-medicating, I just love to drink. You know, I love the taste. I love being with people. I collected, like, cocktail stuff. And I didn't drink as much as my mom. So, I thought,
right.
Maybe...
That's the thing is I used to date a heavy drinker. I'm like, you know, I don't drink during the day. I don't like day drinking at all. I don't want to drink at work, but like at night, once I have that first one, it's like, I have to have two more, sometimes three. And I know that that's not right. You know,
then I do recommend, like, given a shot to just go in without for a while. You know, you said you didn't like yourself when you went without, right? That was the problem. You were unhappy when you tried sobriety.
I thought it was going to be this glorious, everyone does their, you know, dry January, and they feel like they reset, and then they go on to February. And I did not have that at all. In fact, I was living, maybe I didn't want to sit and live with my own thoughts. Maybe that's, you know, like, maybe I need to do that.
I was going to say... I think it's really hard for those of us that have trouble stopping to feel that immediate relief when we do stop, right?
Yeah.
And I just recommend finding some other people. Also, talk therapy. Just one other friend that maybe is going through the same thing. You know, again, Google, very helpful. There are all kinds of options out there for finding support, right? And I cannot recommend a specific program, right? But I can tell you that, like, what we say in recovery is no one does it alone. Everyone's story is different, but no one does it alone. And I think that that might be something for you to try.
Holly, I hope that's helpful.
It was very helpful. Thank you so much for doing this program, and thanks for everything.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I guess we're going to leave it there with Anna-Marie Cox, writer, host of the science fiction podcast Space the Nation, and author of The Cut's new advice column. You know The Cut from New York Magazine. The Cut's new advice column about sobriety called Sober Questioning. We could have gone on and on and on, unfortunately, with more callers and tweeters who have these experiences that we've been hearing. Anything you want to say in wrapping up or summing up or just promoting your column?
Sure. I enjoyed writing my first column because it was about what to say or do when people, like, when you're having trouble in a social situation or when it seems like people want you to drink. And the thing I recommended saying is maybe later, you know, maybe I'll have a drink later. And the reason I love that response is because that's true for all drinking. Just you do it one drink at a time. So anyone out there who's struggling, don't think of it as, oh, I can never drink again. Just think about turning down one drink at a time. You think you want to drink, tell yourself maybe later. In an hour, try to say maybe later again. You know, it doesn't have to be forever. Just has to be one. You may have heard before, one day at a time. But I like even better, sort of one drink at a time. That's all it has to be.
One conversation at a time with Anna Marie Cox. Anna Marie, thank you so much. Really helpful.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.